What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
I'm so glad you're with us here on the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you learning ways to keep more of what you make. Coming up later, I'm so into you keeping a car longer and longer and longer. Why is that so important to me? I want to tell you why. But right now I want to talk about something so many millions of Americans do by rote. They're members of Amazon Prime, paying $119 a year to be able to have 1 to 2 day delivery of items at no minimum, to have occasionally access to items that are for Prime members only, to have access to Prime Instant Video, to have access to Amazon's No Frills, not the Full Frills, the No Frills music service. There are a lot of different things that Amazon uses to keep us connected to it. I'm a funny situation in that I pay the $119 a year for Amazon because there are a series of shows that my family loves to watch that are only on the Prime Instant Video service. So I look at it as like a $10 a month video subscription. We order very few items from Amazon Prime. And so in my case, when nobody's really interested in those Prime video shows anymore, we're done, because there's nothing else that would hold us there. But everybody's situation is a little different. So at Clark.com, we put together a quiz that'll take you, probably about 3 minutes to fill out, where you ask yourself 13 questions. And so you can just go down the questions really quickly on the Amazon Prime quiz, and you just circle your choices on the 13. This actually isn't going to take even as long as I said. And then you add up the points you come up with based on the answers, and we've got a scale that if you scale above 75 points on this quiz, then yeah, it's worth it for you to spend $120 a year. But if you fall below that, then this is really money you're throwing down the tubes. Another thing with Amazon, two other things. You, even as a non-Prime member, you hit a minimum order bucket just like you do with Walmart. And you don't have to worry about being a Prime member. You're still going to get free shipping. It's not going to be 1 or 2 days, but you'll get free shipping. And so I think that's really important for you to think about, that you don't necessarily have to have the Prime membership in order to get free shipping. It would just, Amazon would become more like a lot of other retailers that you shop at online. But the other key factor, most of the time, Amazon's not cheap anymore. It's about convenience. So if you're about the lowest price, Amazon ain't it most of the time. Matt is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Matt.
Hi, Clark. How are you?
Great. Thank you, Matt. How can I be of service to you?
Well, I had a question about our company offers 401k program, a Roth and traditional 401k. And or you can do a combination. And we have employees who have asked me, which should they do? And we have employees in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. And I'm reluctant to give the advice, partly because I'm not positive based on, I'm not sure what tax bracket they're in and
sure,
what should be recommended or what resource should I go to find. And so I thought I would start with you.
All right. So as a general rule, the younger someone is, the more they will benefit over time by doing a Roth 401k instead of a traditional 401k. So the people who are coming to you saying, what in the world do I do? If they're in their 20s and 30s, normally they're not ultra high on the income scale, unless these are people who work in the computer field that are making big, big money at a young age. they benefit mightily from doing the Roth 401k because the tax deduction they would get doing the traditional is not valuable enough to overcome the fact that all the money they have in their account and everything it might earn over the next 30 to 40 years will be taxed. So by giving up the upfront benefit tax-wise of the traditional, every dollar they put in grows tax-free and then is spent tax-free by them down the road.
So does that imply that 20s and 30s do more of the Roth when you're in your 40s, do a combination?
40s is kind of on the bubble because people in their 40s tend to be higher up on the pay scale, not always, but often. And there's not that many years ahead of them for the advantages of the Roth growing as a big tax-free pile to be a benefit. So often, you mentioned that you have a third option of doing part traditional, part Roth.
Yeah.
There's advantages in retirement to having money in a pre-tax pile and in a post-tax pile. So often in somebody's 40s, it's good to have both.
Okay.
Unless somebody has saved heavily in their 20s and 30s in a traditional, then there'd be an advantage in their 40s now that there are so many more employers offering the Roth 401k to go Roth. And that way in retirement, again, they have the flexibility of both pre-tax money and post-tax money.
Okay.
In the 50s,
yeah.
If somebody is a higher income earner in their 50s, they would likely be better off getting the current tax deduction so that they can put in a higher percent of their pay into the 401k.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
And if someone's, even if somebody's in their 50s, they're not earning a lot, they would be better off considering doing the Roth 401k because tax brackets have everything to do with it. Somebody who's a moderate or low income earner, regardless of age, benefits from doing the Roth. Someone who's a high income earner, as they get older, they definitely are going to lean towards doing the traditional 401k. Mike is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Mike.
Hey, it's off the day too, young man.
Well, great to talk with you. How can I serve you today, Mike?
Well, I've been reading your columns and your articles for many years, and I got a 24-year-old grandson that's taken a couple of tests, and it seems to be some kind of bogus. They say they're free, and by the time you get finished with it, they're wanting a couple hundred dollars.
Tests for what?
Well, my question was, where can I steer my 24-year-old grandson to find a test that would help him find the best-suited career choice for him?
Oh, that's a great question. So tell me what your 24-year-old grandson did after high school.
Well, he went to college, and he floundered around, so he quit college and came home.
How long did he attend college?
About 2 years.
Okay. So the college he attended, even though he did not graduate from the college, normally will offer former students free career assessment and counseling.
Even though he didn't graduate?
Even though he didn't graduate. And the reason they do that at most colleges is they want to make a connection to your grandson. And if they end up being good help to him when the college needs to raise some money, somebody's more likely to donate to the school when they've gotten help after they attended the school or graduated from it. So it would be unusual that a school would not want to help someone who's a former student, even who left short a degree. That would be my first place I'd suggest. But if the college he went to doesn't have a good career counseling center, or they only work with graduates, there's a website that I like called assessment.com. It's a freemium business model where they have from completely free career testing to where you pay a lot of money for a variety of things they do for you. But absolutely, I would think taking the free one would be a good start for your grandson.
And what's the name again, please?
Assessment.com.
Okay.
And so
I would like him first, though, to reach back to that college he attended, call the career center there, and find out what services are available to him there, because that would be my first favorite choice.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I appreciate that.
All right. Well, best to him and your good granddad looking out for your grandson. Robert is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Clark.
How are you?
Hey, Captain Howard.
Captain is correct.
Okay.
I've never been promoted.
All right. Well, I'm calling with regards to the minimum required distributions. I've reached my middle age, so I'm having to deal with that.
So you are 70.5 years old, huh?
Well, a little bit more.
Okay.
I figure that's about the middle, seeing as I don't know where the other end is.
Okay. So RMDs, for people who are not aware, is this cruel curse that the federal government came up with, where when you reach 70 and a half, you're required to make distributions from 401k plans, IRAs, whatever, based on your remaining life expectancy. And how many different accounts do you have money in that would qualify as money you have to take RMDs from?
Three, but I generally take it only from one account.
Okay.
I'm taking it a little bit from each.
All right. And of those three, how heavily are they in stock type choices?
About 30%.
Okay, that's probably in the neighborhood of where you should be, because you got to worry about inflation over
right.
the long haul. So if you're 70% non-stock, I wouldn't want you to do anything special with the stock. I would be doing my RMD from my non-stock part of those plans.
Okay. Well, the question is, what to do with it?
Once you pull it out?
Yeah.
So you don't need it to live on?
Right.
Is it money that you'll eventually want family to inherit?
Either that or, you know, buy an airplane or, you know, something, an island.
Something really useful.
Right.
Well, if it's money you don't need and there's something you'd like to do to really treat yourself, go ahead and do it. Or if you have adult children that you'd like to help out, you're allowed to give an adult child up to $15,000 in a year without any gift tax implications at all.
Per person.
Yep. So, I mean, if you don't want to give it away to family or charity, or you don't want to do something fun for yourself, and you don't need the money, this is going to sound weird, I would put it into an investment account, and I would buy a total stock market index fund or something like that with it. That would be ultimately a great inheritance asset for somebody to get way down the road. But let's hope that that's way, way down the road.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Diane is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Diane. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. Hey, I just have a really super quick question for you.
Sure.
I've been listening to you talk about the Chromebook for online banking, and I want to do that, but how do I delete the sites off my computer? Do I just delete them, or do I need to do more?
Yeah, I mean, you can delete the sites and then go clear out your browser history.
Okay.
And someone who does tech every day would say, That's not enough. That's not enough. We can't prevent every last possibility. So you take the necessary precautions. It's like you get in your car and you lock the door and you put on a seatbelt. It doesn't mean you're not going to be in an accident. But if you do those steps with your legacy computer, with any financial stuff you've done on it, that is, to me, the necessary steps you should follow, and you should be A-okay. And the whole Chromebook thing, have you ever used one?
No.
You are going to love being on a Chromebook. In fact, you're going to love it so much for the financial stuff that you're going to end up at some point buying a Chromebook for your everyday stuff.
Okay.
Because the machines, you pop them open, and you're on the internet typically in 4 seconds. There's no boot up. There's nothing like that. There's no weird messages you get. And all they do is surf. And if you travel with one, they tend to have somewhere around 9 to 11 hours of battery life.
Okay, well, that's helpful.
And they're so cheap.
Yeah, no, I know. I've been looking around going, well, I could afford that easily. So thanks for the tip on that. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And I hope you have a great day.
You too. Thanks so much.
Thanks. And Joel, we have time for some Ask Clarks here, maybe one or two.
Sure, Clark. Yeah, Mary Beth wrote in and says, is it safe to use the opt-out service that's listed on your credit card offer? The letter states that you can choose to stop receiving pre-screened offers of credit by calling a number. Is that safe?
Opt-out pre-screen is the real deal. Optoutprescreen.com. You don't have to wait for a solicitation to come to you. You can go to optoutprescreen.com. Then freak out about the fact that you have to give your social security number, but you have to because the way the credit bureaus track you, build the dossier on you, slice you, dice you, sell you over and over again to people who want your information is they do it with your social security number being at the center of that. So just click to opt out. And the funniest thing, it's like these people with credit bureaus who actually have no sense of humor at all, they must think they have one. You can opt in to additional offers. Just remember, you want to click to opt out of all of them.
All right, Clark. Ricardo says, I've had several packages delivered by the post office, marked delivered, but the package doesn't show up till the next day. In all cases, packages were marked to meet the promised delivery date, but not actually delivered. Have you heard of this happening?
Oh, yes, I have. And I don't know exactly if it's pressure it's being applied to postal workers or what the reason is, but you can't believe the Postal Service system that says something has been delivered.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable, hand-battered, cooked-to-order chicken fingers.
Chicken up.
Crispy, crinkle-cut fries.
Hot potato coming through.
Buttery Texas toast.
Toast walking.
And secret Cane's sauce.
Topping off now.
Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app.
Go, go, go!
Raising Cane's chicken fingers. One love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
We're going to talk about one of my obsessions here on the Clark Howard Show, and I'd like to welcome you to where we're all about you learning ways to save more and spend less, and don't let anyone ever rip you off. We're talking about you ripping yourself off. We as Americans put ourselves into a trap, and we do it with what we buy that we then have to borrow money for. Top of the list, the vehicle we drive. It has become accepted by so many people that you want to have a car note. Want to have a car note? Why does anybody want to have to write a check every month for a vehicle loan? Now, it's funny. I'm surrounded by people on our Clark crew who don't have vehicle loans. Because we're like-minded, you know, we do what we do for that reason. Producer Joel buys very used vehicles to never have a loan. And I'm curious, when's the last time you have had a vehicle with a loan?
All right, so the last time I had a vehicle with a loan was actually the only time I've ever bought a new car and the only time I ever will buy a new car, which was when I got my Nissan Leaf.
And the reason I bought it new was because of the tax incentives, federal and state, that essentially made the price, made the car half price of what it normally would be. And I was also able to get a 0% loan for that car. So I took that. But other than that, never had a car loan and never will have one again.
And Kim, you are someone who cars have never been something you cared about.
No.
And the whole process of getting a vehicle, you dread.
True.
And you, at one point in our journey together, you made some vehicle purchasing decisions that were, well, not the most brilliant.
That's very nice of you to say. They were borderline insane. Yeah.
And so you ended up buying a vehicle completely without shopping around or doing any research at all.
I got dropped off at the car dealership when I was like 28 years old because I got so excited. I finally understood that I had good credit and somebody was offering 0% financing it and I needed to go out of town that weekend. So I had my roommate at the time drop me off at the car dealership. And then I found out that car dealership only sold PT Cruisers and pickup trucks. And I couldn't afford a PT Cruiser. So I drove a pickup truck for 10 years.
At least you drove it for 10 years. So
well, yeah, I didn't want to make it a
worse. You finished
paying
off the loan after 5 years?
I did.
So 5 year loan, 0%.
Yeah.
And then you drove 5 years, no payment.
Yep.
And then that truck was ready to be left by the side of the road.
Literally.
And so you bought another vehicle. And is that one paid off now, or are you still carrying a note?
That one has been paid off for a very long time. It's the one that Sean drives it now. That was the Yaris. And I just recently, last year, bought my first car with all cash. So that's the car that I'm driving now.
And so we all have learned in different ways that we don't want to make payments.
Truth.
Because the difference it makes in your overall financial picture is gigantic. Most people buy a vehicle thinking about, well, I can afford that payment every month. And so the thing about what their take home is, and oh yeah, so if that's $417 a month, I can do that, or whatever the number is. But what you're not thinking about is what that $417 a month could do for you otherwise, in extinguishing other debt you may have, building up savings, putting money aside for kids' schooling, putting money aside for your own retirement. So I want you to think of the fact that vehicles are so reliable now. I told you recently that the average age of a vehicle on the road is the longest it's ever been. And don't think of wheels as lifestyle. Think of them as just transportation, and you want it to be as affordable as it can be. Mike is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Clark. How are you?
Great. Thank you, Mike. You want to talk to me about something that is an upsetting topic for so many people, and that is student loans.
Yes, Parent PLUS loans.
So carrying an interest rate of 6.8%, 7.5%, somewhere in there?
I think I'm in the low sixes, right around 6% to 6.25%, somewhere in that vicinity. But I've got about $50,000 that I still have out for both of my daughters. So they're both graduated and doing their careers now, but like a lot of people, I didn't put enough money back for them for college, so we're stuck with the dreaded Parent PLUS loan.
All right, so I'm going to step right into the thick of it in your family dynamic.
Okay.
Your daughters, are they both doing well in their careers?
One graduated PA school and is now practicing neurosurgery, and the other works for an airline and is in the process of testing and trying to get into the State Department.
Okay, because I know this sounds crazy and it may not be a path you've thought of, but you sacrificed and put yourself on the line for these loans for your daughters that have created the careers they're in.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it at least as a shared responsibility to pay them off. Legally, mm-hmm. It's your responsibility, but as a practical matter, I think it's reasonable for you to ask your daughters to take on
at least a portion of the payback on these $50,000 in loans.
Mm-hmm. And I plan on doing that whenever they had some small well, the one that's gone through PA school, of course, she, being the medical thing, she probably has around $150,000 in student loans herself.
That, oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's not cheap to get through PA school.
But her earning power is going to be very good going forward.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it will be for the future. She's in her first year of practicing, so as she goes, it should get a lot better as she goes. What I was really calling about was, is there any places, or I see a lot of these places that do student loan refinancing to lower rates, but I don't know if any of them do Parent Plus loans, and that's what I was kind of wanting to check into.
Well, it depends on the lender, and generally they will do Parent Plus loans. The question is how much lower they'll be. That's why I was asking where you're at. And mm-hmm. your overall indebtedness and your credit score determines if you're going to be able to create enough headroom between a Parent Plus at around 6% and what you can refi with Credible. Have you checked out them, Credible?
No, I have not.
Credible and SoFi?
And SoFi?
Yeah, and...
Well, I can tell you my credit score, I just got a notification from... Credit Karma the other day, and I checked it, and it was like 740. So
740 puts you right on the margin of where they look at you as a very extremely low risk borrower.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very good credit score, and it puts you not quite into the elite category, but it's a very good score.
Are they typically quite a bit lower than the company that would be servicing the loan now?
Well, that's why you go shop with both of them.
Okay.
And so if they can beat it by, generally I like for you to make a move when you can lower it one interest rate point.
Right.
So if you could go from 6-whatever down to 5-whatever,
right,
and you got a full point of change, then that's a substantial enough difference and what you'd be paying and is worth making happen.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a taxing payment with the two of them combined every month. My payments are about $720 a month. So, and I've got that for about five years on one and 6 on the other. So,
yeah, that's pretty awful.
Yeah.
And that's why I have this, you know, where I jumped right into the thing about you and your daughters and what they should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
That comes from all the years I've talked to parents who feel like that's not something that they would expect their kids to do. But I think you basically took on the risk of helping them get the skills and degrees that have led to their careers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think it's perfectly reasonable, if it's causing too much strain on you, to have the conversation with both of them.
Sure.
But that's your choice and your option.
Right. Okay.
But give those two a try and see if you can get a rate that's lower enough that it's like, yeah, this makes sense. I'm going to do this. Chuck is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Chuck.
Good afternoon, Clark.
Chuck, you want to do something that is actually very popular with millennials and with people who are retirees. What is that?
Travel, in other words, throughout the United States. But we want to sell our house and buy our motorhome. And our question is, well, we're going to reside in the motorhome, and what do we do for a permanent address?
Montana. There are specific advantages tax-wise that people who have no permanent address but are living in a motorhome register the motorhome in the state of Montana, and that becomes your official state of residence. That's been something that has been a common practice among retirees. In fact, I bet, I haven't done it, but if you use Google or whatever search engine and you asked about, you did a search, register motorhome Montana, something like that, there would be all kinds of explanations about why the tax benefits are so much better in Montana. So that's why you want to tag it or plate it, whichever it's called in the part of the country you live in, Chuck, in the state of Montana. And how, are you going to spend any number of months in any one place, as best you can tell?
No, we're just going to get in it and go. We'll probably like go to Utah and do the five state parks. That's probably going to probably take about a month, I guess. I don't know. I mean, it's going to take a little while. I mean, stay down there, stay there for a while, just move on. Just, you know, just go to different places. But now, what do we do for like a would we have a post office box? Or
no,
how do we get-
no. In fact, there are so many people doing what you're looking at doing that there are now a bunch of companies that all they do is receive your mail for you. And depending on who you use, and I would read reviews on the various services, but depending on who you use, you tend to pay typically $10 to $50 a month for someone to receive your mail for you. And it depends on the service you use and how many services you want from them, where you are on that fee schedule. The ones that are more like $50 a month not only open your mail, scan it, and email it to you, but they also automatically do your deposits for you if you have checks come in.
Okay. Well, we get a lot of our stuff by electronic mail, so it's...
But you will get physical mail that you need somebody to receive. I mean, if you have a relative that you really trust and are close to, or a really good friend that you know you could trust with 100% confidence, you could have their address as your address of record for mail, for physical mail, and then they could do that same thing for you. There are these free programs you can use that they could scan the relevant pages of mail they think you need to see. And like, as an example, I have an app on my phone called, I think it's called Fast Scan. I want to look at this. That is free to use, and you can scan in mail. Yeah, Fast Scan. And so you open the physical mail, you scan the page you need to send, and then it just comes as an email. Really, really easy and simple, scanning with the phone.
Okay.
But by the way, while we're talking, I did that thing. I went and searched register Motorhome Montana, and I got, let's see, I got 111,000 results. So it's a very, very common thing that people do.
Okay.
And obviously they're doing it for the tax reasons. And I hope you really love your time on the road.
This is something my wife and I have been talking about. And
By the way, when you get to Utah, do not overlook my favorite National Park in Utah, Capitol Reef National Park.
Okay.
It's the most overlooked of the ones in Utah. And most people go to Bryce and Zion and maybe Arches or whatever. Go to Capitol Reef. I promise you'll love it. It's time for Ask Clark. That's where you post a question for me at clark.com. And then you get the unique privilege of having producer Joel ask your question for you.
All right, Clark. Sona wants to know, why don't you recommend certificates of deposit as a safe place for people to stow some money that they won't need right away? I personally am afraid of the stock market, and I put my money in CDs.
Well, CDs are a great place to park money. Lately, I've not recommended them because the online savings accounts have generally been a better choice than CDs. That actually is starting to potentially change, and you want to compare the online savings accounts to CDs. But the reason I call it a parking space is money you put in a CD, money you put in a savings account, will not out-earn inflation. And I, for one, don't fear the stock market. If you do, I have to respect that and just know that you're going to have to save more money than you might have expected to otherwise doing CDs instead of doing any investing. One thing I would also tell you, please shop CDs at renewal. Shop online. Find the best deals out there on CDs, because if you just go to one bank or one credit union and buy CDs from that bank or credit union,
you're missing what may be a much better deal available somewhere else.
All right, and Hertha wants to know, what's a good number of credit cards that I should have?
Minimum two major credit cards, and depending on your patterns of use, how much available credit you have, you may want three or four. You get past three or four, and it's overkill with credit cards, and you don't want them all with the same issuer, like a bank that might issue multiple different cards. If you have all your cards with one bank and they decide they don't like you anymore, you could go from as many cards as you have to none right away. So I like for you to mix it up. Have a Discover, American Express, Visa, MasterCard. Have them from different people. And you want to have enough available credit that you're going to use a very small amount of that credit each month. Never more than 30% of your overall available credit on cards. You're listening to The Clark Howard Show. Thanks for joining us today. The Clark Howard Show is produced by Kim Drobes, Joel Larsgaard, Deborah Reese, and Jim Ayers. And remember, 24 hours a day, we're there to serve you at clark.com and clarkdeals.com.